Omagano is here with me on a gathering of Global Green Grants and 350.org. Yep. She comes from Namibia. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what you're working on there and why you are here in Paris on the COP21?
Okay. So I work in a youth-led project. I'm representing a youth-led project called Young Achievers Empowerment Project. We are based in Namibia. We have representation in the whole country, so in all 14 regions. Mm-hmm. What we do is try to empower young people in various issues, pressing issues in the country. We also try to inspire youth because we feel that an inspired young person is a motivated person, and a motivated person is someone that will take an issue, take action, and make a difference in their community. So we're trying with the young people that are inspired in some way is for them to go and make a difference in their community. So we meet every Saturday, mm-hmm. And we sometimes get motivational speakers to just come and talk to the people. So we try and tackle issues that are very, very pressing in the country. The aim is to encourage open dialogue, to have a space where young people can openly talk about issues, where they can debate about issues and come up with solutions to the various issues.
Okay. What are the issues that youth face in your country?
There are quite a few. Okay. Unemployment is one. Mm-hmm. There's a high unemployment rate. A lot of graduates, when they finish, they just have no job. There's also gender-based violence. Climate change is also a big issue now. So at home, there's not much awareness on climate change. But we're currently experiencing a drought. It's the third consecutive year, and it's hit us quite bad. It's the worst drought ever recorded, okay. If I'm not mistaken. But this year it's worse because the rainfall patterns have changed. So the rainy season is not so long anymore. If it does rain, it's not as intense as it used to be. Mm-hmm. At the moment, it's felt all over the country. It's felt in the cities. It's felt in the rural areas where people depend directly on rainfall for their livelihood. So if it doesn't rain, there's literally no food. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the city, we get our water from the dams that are collected by the rain. And if it doesn't rain, then the dams are empty. So at the moment, the dams are empty. They're mm-hmm. They've reached a stage where it's critical, and it's now we're officially facing a water crisis, mm-hmm. where we are now using in Windhoek, the main city, we're using the water that's supposed to be used next year already.
Okay.
So we are faced a situation where if it doesn't rain, we're not so sure what's going to happen. And as much as it is a challenge, it's an opportunity because now everyone in the country is feeling the effects of the drought, and we can't at the moment link it to climate change because it could just be a cycle. But the issue is that what if the drought is prolonged mm-hmm. for the next 10 years because of the change in climate? Mm-hmm. What do we do then? Do we have the capacity to face such an issue? Where do we go? Do we have the infrastructure? Do we have the financial resources to make a plan B? So, because Windhoek has about 800,000 people, and if there's no water, these people are displaced. Where do they go? You
yes.
know, and this brings me to why we are at the COP. It's because we are currently feeling the effects of climate change. We are feeling them. It's a reality. It's happening, and I think it's important that message comes across very clearly. And we're hoping that through our voices being heard, through us telling the story, that it might affect the agreement in some way. Because if we don't have a good agreement after this COP, then we don't know what the way forward is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you believe that this COP is going to be useful? Do you trust the result of the COP?
Well, the way it's going now, with because I've been fortunate enough to attend some of the negotiations, it's a lot of back and forth. Agreements are not being reached. Decisions aren't being made. We can't reach the same objective, and there's a lot of text that is being reviewed and revised. And
so bureaucratic, no?
It's very bureaucratic. Okay. It's politics. That's how politics are. But it's affecting us, you know, directly. Mm-hmm. It's no longer funny. But I'm hopeful. I feel I have to be hopeful. I have to believe that something good will come from the COP, mm-hmm. because that's all I have left, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't lose that hope. That's why we're here. We're trying to make sure that something good comes out of the COP.
So we are really glad to talk with you, because for now we haven't been able to interview a lot of people that come from Africa. Mm-hmm. What do you think is that?
Quite a few people from Africa, not as much as the more developed world, mm-hmm. but there are a few, but most of them are from West Africa, East Africa, North Africa. There's very, very few representation from Southern Africa, to a point where if I hear someone is from a country in Southern Africa, I get so excited that, you know, there's someone here representing us, because as much as we have similar struggles, we are comprised mostly of semi-arid nations. Mm-hmm. So it's like the drought that's facing our country is also a regional problem. Okay. We're not the only ones. I know Zambia also had a drought, but it rained there now, so they're fortunate. So we have a lot of similar issues, and it would be so amazing to have more representation from Southern Africa at the COP, because we have similar stories to tell. Mm-hmm. We have similar stories. We do have different stories, obviously, but a lot of it is similar. And if we can unite, the more we are, the better our voice, the more we're heard, and the stronger our voice. So it would be amazing if we could get more young people from Southern Africa attending these international conferences. And a lot of the times it's funding. We don't get funds to come here. Yes. Sometimes we just don't organize ourselves well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we also have to take blame sometimes. But a lot of times it's just not, we just can't afford to come here.
And in the side of your governments, mm-hmm. you say that you have a lot of problems in common. The problems of the rain and the lack of water. Do your governments have some agreements, or do they collaborate when you have similar problems, the countries that are in South Africa?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for Southern Africa, there's what we call the Southern African Credit Committee, I think. Mm-hmm. It's called SADC for short. SADC, and that's where it's a platform where all the government officials, the uh-huh. more high level, like presidents, come together and discuss issues that are similar, like the energy crisis, mm-hmm. And come up with policies for that suit the whole of SADC, and also come up with ways to collaborate. So seeing knowing what other countries are doing, mm-hmm. and knowing how to tap from those countries and how to work with the different countries. So for SADC, there's a really, really good, it is obviously political and bureaucratic sometimes, mm-hmm. but I think the collaboration between the different countries is really, really good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know if there is some feedback also from the opulent nations, the ones that are more to blame for climate change? What kind of feedback do you feel you have from the first occidental and rich world?
Just based on my own observations.
Of course, it can be a personal opinion, always.
Yeah, yeah. Especially with what we're negotiating for. So the world is trying to reach an agreement where the emission levels are dropped so that the temperatures can go below 2. Mm-hmm. But we've seen that even with all the intended national contributions, that 2% is still not reached. And a lot of it is because the developed nations, the ones that are causing the pollution, are the ones that don't want to decrease their emissions because of development. So that in itself tells me that maybe we don't matter that much. Maybe the whatever consequences we face, it's okay. I would love to see them trying harder, because I feel that we shouldn't even be negotiating. It should be non-negotiable. I mean, these are things that are happening at the moment. And sometimes I think that do people really know what's going on at a community level? Because I have spoken to some other young people from the developed nations, and they have, you know, they're so surprised at the challenges that we're facing, that if it doesn't rain, there's no food. It's so amazing to me that people don't know this already. You know what I mean?
I am part of one of the countries that are in the north, you know, and maybe right now we are not the richest. You know, Spain is in a big, big crisis. But yeah, we are part of the European Union.
Yeah.
And believe me, we have a lot of culture. And yes, we are very manipulated by media and by our politicians and for sure by lobbies and everything. But we are cultivated enough to know the truth.
Yeah.
And this is very basic. If it doesn't rain, there is no agriculture. This is basic school.
Basic.
We don't want to understand.
Yeah, I think we refuse to understand. And what really hurts me is that so much of the climate activism going on is about, yeah, we need to save the polar bear. You know, the ice is melting. Yes, we do need to do all of that, but there are people involved. And, you know, people's lives should matter too. And I don't hear a lot of that. A lot of, you know, there are people out there feeling the effects. It's about, I'm not trying to downplay the importance of animals, because the ecosystem is important. But I feel like the effects that an animal is feeling is more important than what a person is feeling. So how do we need to draw the balance. Everything in life is about balance. People should matter, so should the environment. And how do we balance the two? I think that's what we need to look at. I think also our media should probably work harder at getting out these messages. What we're doing now is really good, because more people will hear these stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can also, especially our media, needs to play a much, much, much bigger role in showing these stories to the Western world. And also, I feel that, you know, until you're in someone's shoes, you can't really understand what they're going through. But yeah, we shouldn't be negotiating about these things. This is something, it should be no-brainer. You know, it should be, yeah.
It should be part of common sense, for sure. But yeah, my impression also is that we're just accepting that a part of the world where powerful people are not in is going to be sacrificed, because we don't want to make the change until it's the latest possible to make the most economical benefits possible. And if it takes a lot of lives, well, okay, sorry. It was impossible to do anything else, you know? Negotiation is so hard and blah, 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 blah. And finally, I am very curious. Do you have an idea of how the media from your country and your region are communicating COP21, or what coverage is doing about COP21?
Mm-hmm. So, this is funny. We have one media representative.
Okay.
From the one I know from Namibia.
Uh-huh.
There's only one.
Okay.
But she's fortunately, so she's representing a bigger network.
Mm-hmm.
So she feeds news then to the all the other media outlets.
Okay.
But yeah, that's from Namibia. That's the only one I know. Today I met journalists from Kenya.
See.
From South Africa. So there's probably more that I just haven't connected with or haven't seen.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm hoping that they are really feeding news back home, keeping people updated, and yeah, because we need to spread the message.
Yeah.
No?
Of course.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Right, you're welcome.